أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ما كان على النبي من حرج فيما فرض الله له سنة الله في الذين خلوا من قبل وكان أمر الله قدرا مقدورا الذين يبلغون رسالات الله ويخشونه ولا يخشون أحدا إلا الله وكفى بالله حسيبا ما كان محمد أبا أحد من رجالكم ولكن رسول الله وخاتم النبيين وكان الله بكل شيء عليما يا أيها الذين آمنوا اذكروا الله ذكرا كثيرا وسبحوه بكرة وأصيلا هو الذي يصلي عليكم وملائكته ليخرجكم من الظلمات إلى النور وكان بالمؤمنين رحيما تحيتهم يوم يلقونه سلام وأعد لهم أجرا كريما يا أيها النبي إنا أرسلناك شاهدا ومبشرا ونذيرا وداعيا إلى الله بإذنه وسراجا منيرا. وبشر المؤمنين بأن لهم من الله فضلا كبيرا. ولا تطع الكافرين والمنافقين ودع عذاهم وتوكل على الله وكفى بالله حسيبا. وكفى بالله وكيلا. صدق الله العظيم.
مبارك تجھے ہو ارض مدینہ, مبارک تجھے ہو ارض مدینہ. نبی کا شہر ہے, نبی کا شہر ہے یہ شہر مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. تیرے پاس جب سید دو جہاں ہے, تیرے پاس جب سید دو جہاں ہے, نہ کیورج کے افلاق, نہ کیورج کے افلاق ہو پھر مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. نبی کا شہر ہے, نبی کا شہر ہے یہ شہر مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. تیرے سبز گنبد پہ عالم فدا ہے, تیرے سبز گنبد پہ عالم فدا ہے. فلک جیسے چومے, فلک جیسے چومے زمین مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. نبی کا شہر ہے, نبی کا شہر ہے یہ شہر مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. تیرا ذرہ ذرہ نشان نبی ہے, تیرا ذرہ ذرہ نشان نبی ہے. فدا تجھ پہ میں خاک, فدا تجھ پہ میں خاک شہر مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. احد کے یہ دامن میں خون شہیدہ, احد کے یہ دامن میں خون شہیدہ. سبق دے رہا ہے, سبق دے رہا ہے وفائے مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. نبی کا شہر ہے یہ شہر مدینہ. مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. نشانی ہے اسلام کی عظمتوں کی, نشانی ہے اسلام کی عظمتوں کی. صحابہ کے قدموں سے, صحابہ کی قدموں سے خاک صحابہ کے قدموں سے خاک مدینہ مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. وفاداریوں پر صحابہ کی اختر وفاداریوں پر صحابہ کی اختر ہے تاریخ روشن ہے تاریخ روشن یہ شہر مدینہ مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ. نبی کا شہر ہے نبی کا شہر ہے یہ شہر مدینہ مبارک تجھے ہو اے ارض مدینہ.
السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. الحمدللہ وکفا والصلاة والسلام على سیدنا المصطفی صلی اللہ علیہ وعلى آلہ واصحابہ وبارک وسلم تسلیما کثیرا کثیرا. أما بعد فأعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. قد أفلح من تزكى وذكر اسم ربه فصلى وذكر اسمه قد أفلح من تزكى This ayat you have heard so many times. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ تَزَكَّى. پوری آیت پڑھ لیں. قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنْ تَزَكَّى. It just slips my mind. وَذَكَرَ اسْمَ رَبِّهِ فَصَلَّى. One imam sahab, he read the whole Quran Sharif in Taraweeh without a mistake. And he came to قُلْ هُوَ اللَّهِ and he made mistake. One half has read the whole Quran Sharif without mistake. Beautiful. And he came to Al-Asr. And when he read إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَفِي خُسْرٍ إِلَّا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا then he said وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ and he went away to فَلَهُمْ أَجْرٌ غَيْرُ مَمْنُونَ وَالتِّينَ. So now this ayat I must have read thousands of times. But Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, sometimes He makes you forget so that you don't get dawah of your hafiza. There's a lesson in it for everyone to prevent us from any kind of dawah in our hips, in our memory, of our memory or anything else. And sometimes the Shaykh makes a mistake so that the Murids, they get a lesson. Hazrat Maulana Abrarul Haq Sahab Damat Barakatuhum. Now who has got any kind of doubt in his taqwa, in his knowledge, in his amal? In fact, he's called Muhiyyu Sunnah because of the intensive effort that he makes, or extensive effort that he makes in reviving the sunnats of Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam. But he was in Mina, in the state of Ihram, and he started clipping his nails. In the state of Ihram, he started clipping his nails. Now even an ordinary student of Deen, or anyone that's going for Hajj, if he knows the basic masail of Hajj, then he knows that in a state of Ihram, you cannot clip nails. Hazrat Mufti Mahmud Sahib Rahmatullah Ali was present there. There were lots of other ulama that were around him. Now they were very surprised that a great sheikh of the time is in the state of ihram and is clipping his nails. But nobody had the himmat to ask him. Hazrat Mufti Mahmud Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh, because he was also the Ustad of Maulana Abrarul Haq Sahib Dhamad Barakatum. Our late Hazrat Mufti Mahmud Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh was also the Ustad of some kitab of Maulana Abrarul Haq Sahib. So he immediately said, Hazrat, ya aap kya kar rahe hai? He said, Hazrat, ya aap kya kar rahe hai? You're clipping your nails in a state of ihram. So what did Hazrat reply? He said, mujhe bilkul khayal hi nahi raha. Mujhe bilkul khayal hi nahi raha that I'm in ihram. So what we learn from him? One is that at that time probably his mind was somewhere in the heavens or with Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala or with the Arsh or wherever he was in his state of meditation and muraqabah, that he did not even realize that he was in the state of ihram. But for those who were watching him, now for them, if they had kept quiet and they had dispersed from there, then they would have taken one wrong masla and gone home. They would have said that it's permissible to cut nails in the state of ihram. Why it is permissible? Because we saw a great sheikh of the time cutting nails in the state of ihram. Are you following? That what would they have said? Because of their aqidat, because of the azmat, because of the muhabbat for the sheikh, they would not have asked him at that moment. And then when he would have come conscious, or probably sometimes he might not even have remembered even after that, that his nails were clipped when he was in a state of ihram. But all those who were around there, they would have gone from there. And he always has a big crowd of ulama around him and other people around him. So they would have all gone home and to their countries, and we would have a new ikhtilaf in the ummat. The new ikhtilaf would have been that you are teaching us a masla that you must not cut nails in a state of ihram. And we saw with our own eyes that the sheikh was cutting nails, trimming his nails, clipping his nails in the state of ihram. So now who do we believe? Do we believe you, or do we believe what our eyes saw? And we have got no doubt that he is a sheikh of the time and a great alim and a muhaddis and a mufassir. So do we accept what he did, or do we accept what you are telling us? So from this we learn a lesson that even if the greatest of all sheikhs, the greatest of all alim, the greatest of all muftis, if he has to make an error, a mistake, then with respect and with adab, you ask him that, Hazrat, this action which you have undertaken, then in the kitab we have come across this, so can you give us an explanation? Ask him for an explanation. Don't say my ilm of the kitab is so solid that I know you did wrong. How can you do a thing like that? You are the sheikh of the time, mufti of the time, and you making this kind of amal. Na'uzu billah, you must not make bi'adabi and gustakhi. Hazrat Haji Imdadullah Rahmatullah Alayh wrote something and then he gave it to Hazrat Maulana Gangavi Rahmatullah Alayh. He gave that kitab for correction. Now look at Hazrat Gangavi Rahmatullah Alayh's adab. That he didn't say, Hazrat, this is wrong what you wrote here. Because it was a kitabat error, it was a mistake of kitabat. So he circled it and went and showed, gave it to Hazrat. That's all. Now when he saw that circle there, he so made out that there was a kitabat error there. So with adab, the person asks that what you have done, is it right, is it wrong? If the person recited incorrectly, or the person quoted incorrectly, or some action of his was not what we have learnt, so then with adab you ask that, is this the correct action? What should it be? وَذَكَ رَسْمَ رَبِّهِ فَصَلَّى. Now that is read so many times in the namazes, and we've made bayan on it so many times. So if there is an error, there is nothing wrong in correcting that error. And the ustad must not feel ashamed, the shaykh must not feel ashamed to accept that mistake. There was no such thing as pride in the hearts of our mashayikh and of our akabir. They never considered it below their dignity to accept a mistake, because it is human, error is human. As I gave the genuine example, that the Hafiz was so solid that people used to travel from far and wide just to listen to his Quran Sharif, because they say he never makes a mistake. And he came and made a mistake in Qul Huwa Allah. And the other one made a mistake in Wal Asr. Now, so when he made a mistake in Wal Asr, the whole masjid shouted. Because if you make a mistake in Surah Yasin or Wal Asr, then you must know that the whole masjid will give you luqma. Such a big luqma that if you have to take it, you might not be able to digest it. Very, very loud luqma. There was some hafiz sahab. These days now you've got thousands of hafizes, or hundreds of thousands. Everywhere, every town, every city you have huffaz. But there was a time when huffaz had to be imported just to make taraweeh. Especially in the villages in India, there was hardly a hafiz of the Quran Sharif. What an extensive effort was made by our ulama to establish the makatib and start producing the huffaz of the Quran Sharif. You used to get hafizes that used to read Ya'lamun Ta'lamun, that's about the only thing you used to hear. There was nothing such as the reading with correctly. It was just a speedy reading, somehow the Quran Sharif must get finished. And in many places, besides that hafiz who was reading the Taraweeh, there was nobody else that was a hafiz, no same also. So whether he's reading correctly or incorrectly, if he left out couple rukus or not, nobody used to come to know. So one day one hafiz was making the Taraweeh, and he was always making gadbad in his Taraweeh, skipping some rukus, doing, because he didn't know it himself. But they used to get highly paid for that Taraweeh. That is where this whole issue came up about whether acceptance of anything, any gift or any payment for Taraweeh is jais or not. These days who asks? Because there are so many hafizes, they are waiting for an opportunity to perform in the masajid. There is a queue on the waiting list. They want a place in the masjid, but they can't get a place because so many hafizes. But those days, there are one hafiz now, so they have to fall at his feet and say, we'll give you this so much money, but you read and perform Taraweeh. So he was performing, so he knew a little bit of broken Arabic and some surahs here and there. Now the same surahs he used to read as if he only knows the whole Quran Sharif. So one day he started the, and it so happened that one hafizab of the Quran Sharif really pitched up in that masjid. But that hafizab was also one of the paid baru ones. So this person started, so the Hafiz Sahab who knew the Quran, so he caught up that this person is just fooling the public here. He doesn't know his Quran Sharif. So he made, started coughing, and he started correcting. So that Hafiz Sahab who was making the imamat, he said, Uskut nisful li wa nisful lak. Haza qawmun jahilun. Allahu Akbar. So that Hafiz Sahab caught up that he's not reading Quran Sharif. He's telling me, don't worry, we'll share it out half. This is a qawm of jahiliyah. So these mistakes and errors, if it is made even by a great shaykh of the time, great wali of the time, great muhaddis of the time, then with adab the person must find out, ask for an explanation. Now if Hazrat Mufti Mahmud Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh did not ask for the explanation, what would have happened? Now sometimes even though you know your sarf and nahu and everything, but you can make an error there. That time your mind doesn't go whether this is fa'al, fa'il, maf'ul, what. Because this error is an error. So now the person must ask, what is the explanation? So now Hazrat gave the explanation that mujhe bilkul khyal hi nahi raha. I was not aware, my mind was not there. I forgot completely that I was in the state of ihram. So now there was sadaqah or dam, depending on how many he clipped. So immediately he made sure that according to that, whether it was sadaqah or dam, he executed that. But it became a lesson for all those that were there, that they must not just run away by seeing some action of someone and take it for granted that that is masla. Don't take that as a mas'ala. What mas'ala you know and you are solid in your hafiza is good and you have read it in the kitab and you are convinced that that is the true mas'ala. So then with respect you ask for an explanation, and who knows what the explanation might be, that why he is doing it like that. There are different reasons for it. One great alim who was a very great follower of the sunnat, never misses out on any sunnat. He had such love for the sunnats of Rasulullah Pak Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And he was a great faqih of the time also. He had so many students of his who became muftis under him. So it was always his habit not to cut his hair in those 10 days of Zilhijjah. Because Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam said, the person who intends doing qurbani, then he must not cut his nails or trim his hair until he has made the qurbani. So from the 1st of Zilhijjah till the 10th, he is to keep always, for years and years, because he was a paband of the sunnat. It's not farz wajib, but he's paband of the sunnat. But then, for 1 or 2 years after that, people saw him that now he's shaving, he's trimming his mustache, and they got very surprised that here was someone who was very paband of the sunnat, and what happened to him now? So there again, some people went to him, and they asked him. He said, Hazrat, I mean, you have always taught us that this was masnoon or mustahab, and you always made amal on it, and you encouraged us also to make amal on it. Then what is the reason that now suddenly you change that amal? So now listen to his explanation. He said that so many people came to me and they said that, Maulana, you must give bayan, and you must be firm and hard on those people who are trimming their hair. See how they are doing against the Quran and Sunnah. And they are leaving out something that is compulsory, because we read in the some kitab or pamphlet or somewhere that those who are making qurbani, it is not jais for them. Now that not jais for them, so the translation of that was given, or the meaning of that was given as haram, that it is haram for them to. So now look at it, from where it went away to where. It was a mustahab action or a sunnat action, but the amal of the people took it to the extent of farz. So now it became necessary, because he was a faqih, he was a mufti, and he was a great sheikh also. So it became necessary for him to show it with amal now, that it is not farz or wajib. So now those people who were coming and saying, look at that person, he's trimmed his hair, look at that person, he's clipped his nails, look at that person, he's taken off his mustache. So now everybody got quiet, that if now this great mufti and alim and sheikh is doing that, so there must be some reason in it. But you could see what the reasoning was behind it, to bring it back onto i'tidal, that to educate the people, must give them ta'lim which is qawli also and fa'li also. So if a person does not understand, for example, any chapter of the kitab, there is some ibarat that is difficult, and you are a mudarris, you are teaching. Now it's not necessary that if you did the kitab, Zidaya and Bukhari Sharif and Tirmizi Sharif and Abu Dawud Sharif and all the other kitabs, and especially those days we used to do a lot of mantiq kitabs too, which which we never used to understand too. And sometimes Siraji also, you can't work out what are the shares of the people until you haven't learnt it properly. Siraji, in our time it was thought, now that we don't know Urdu properly in the first place, and if you listen, yahan par do bata char, ek bata teen, and teen bata do. Now what you can, now we're wondering what's all these batas and patas here. Now those fractions, you must know the fractions first to be able to understand Siraji. That the wife will get 1/8 if there are children. And if there are no children, she will get 1/4. The husband will get 1/4 if there are children, and 1/2 if no children. Now all those things. So just reading it one time, the person doesn't get to know Siraji. He will have to do a lot of exercises, then he really becomes familiar with the masail of Siraji. So now if the person is suddenly given kitabs to teach, which he is not familiar with, the increase of Darul Ulooms is an excellent thing. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm talking to the students here, mostly who will be inshallah coming alims and muftis and muhtamims of madrasas, that the increase of Darul Ulooms is an excellent thing. There's nothing wrong. But what is becoming a bit of a problem and concern now is that we cannot find sufficient people to handle the different kitabs at that level. So what is happening is that a student qualifies today, tomorrow he is given Mishkat Sharif, and the next year he is given Bukhari Sharif, and he became a Shaykhul Hadith. Whereas our Akabir, they used to start from the first kitab, from Mizan, Munshaib, or whatever they were teaching in those days as the first and the beginning. At the beginning, they used to start with that, and they used to come up. Some exceptions used to get here and there, but under the nigrani of their wasatiza, they used to start from them. So what used to happen is that their istidad used to become very solid, and teaching it over a period of time, then even their students were able to then benefit from their extensive knowledge. But if you just take them out from there and put them into Mishkat Sharif, into Bukhari Sharif, into Hidayah Akhirin and Awwalin, then we have a big problem, because many ibarat the person won't understand. When the Ustad was teaching, so many sections they are there which the student was not even concentrating. He may have been sick, or it was that part of the year which, as one of our Ustads used to say, that in the Hadith Kitabs generally what happens now in many of the Kitabs, he says, Semai tak Ustad bhi samajhta hai, Shagird bhi samajhta hai. Semai se Shashmai tak, phir Ustad samajhta hai, Shagird kuch nahi samajhta. Aur Shashmai ke baad se salana imtihan tak, na Ustad samajhta hai, na Shagird samajhta hai. Sab chalo chalo ka daur hota hai, aage badho bas. So if it was one of those doors, then you don't even know what was taking place. Now you got the kitab to teach. Now when you got the kitab to teach, what do you do? Because you're coming across mushkil ibarat and you can't make hull of it. So you must never ever feel it below your dignity to go to the ustad next door, to go to somebody else who is there for a number of years and say that I can't make hull of this ibarat. What is it? Because I've got to teach this lesson. Hazrat Maulana Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh was the ustad of Hazrat Maulana Ashraf Ali Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. He said, from the dars, he used to just get up, take the kitab and go to some other ustad there, and he said, isme kya hai, hal kar do. Whereas he was ustad of everybody. But he used to do that so that he shows the other asatiza that it is not below your dignity if you have to go and find out what is the hal of this masala. He used to go and ask, what is the hal of this masala? And he was, and then come back to the class, and then again, how? He used to teach that lesson. Again, he never used to say that, he never used to feel ashamed to say that this was a mushkil ibarat and I went to that ustad and he gave this explanation and now I'm giving you the explanation. Whereas, I mean, he was blessed with such knowledge and such taqwa and everything, but because he was becoming an ustad of so many students who were later going to become great mashayikh of the time, and great muftis and alims, so he was teaching them a lesson that you must not feed it below your dignity to go and say, please correct me, I don't know whether the, what is the meaning of this. You must never feel ashamed. You must always be ready to listen. Many a times it happens that if the person is not a hafiz of the Quran Sharif, and he was just listening to the Imam who recites the surahs in the salats. Now most of the surahs which we learnt, who are not hafizes, and that is the greatest regret that I have, that we didn't do hifz of the Quran Sharif. So most of the surahs which we read in the namazes, we listen, we have heard the imams read in the Fajr Salat, wherever the person grows up, so his imam, normally they have certain surahs from Paraya Ammo here and there that they read. Now you listen to it. Now at that time you don't have the knowledge of Arabic, you don't know what the grammar is, you don't know what the proper verse is, but you heard the imam reading, so you picked it up. Now we take it for granted that we heard correctly and we are now reading correctly. In fact, sometimes a person then becomes a hafiz also, but when he comes to those rukus and surahs, he takes it for granted that he already knows it, so he goes through it very fast. And if his ustad is not sharp and does not correct him, then he will grow up with that mistake and he will live with that mistake all his life. Many of them, it has happened that they became hafizes of the Quran Sharif, and because when they're giving sabak, now that ruku that Imam Sahib used to read in the Fajr Salat, now he learnt it well. Now just for argument's sake, if it was Surah Hujarat. Now it's a long surah, but the person, because the Imam Sahib used to read that, so the person learnt it. Now when he came to that, so he read fast, so the ustad also, he saw them that the student knows the Quran Sharif, this ayat and this ruku very well. So he too didn't concentrate. Now that student is reading it exactly as he heard the person that Imam read. So with that mistake that Imam was making, which was not being corrected, he also started reading the same thing. يُعْجِبُ الزُّرَّاعَ لِيَغِيزَ بِهِمُ الْكُفَّارِ. Now that zurra'a at the end of it is an ayn. So one imam used to read zurra'a. Now what he used to take it for? Mad. Thinking that there's an alif there. So the person that was listening to him, he also started reading it in the same manner. He became an alim, but he was still reading it, pulling along mad there. Because he heard that imam always reading يُعْجِبُ الزُّرَّاءَ لِيَغِيْزَ بِهِمُ الْكُفَّارِ. So that can also happen. So the person must never feel ashamed to go and have it corrected. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala elevates the state of the person who says that I made a mistake. What is the correct ayat? What is the correct hadith? Or what is the correct explanation? And the person who just accepts that and feels very offended if a mistake and an error is pointed out, as happens in many masajid in the month of Ramadan, that if the hafiz is corrected, he gets offended. He says, no, that man is after me, is gunning me, just waits for my mistake. Although you do get some people like that too, that they just go to the masjid for no other purpose but to take out mistakes of the huffaz. Because if that person was very sincere, then he should have come in the first sub. And if the imam really made a mistake, then with gentle voice, he should have pointed out the error. But I have experienced myself before I used to go to different masajid in the month of Ramadan. One night here, one night they go and give bayan after the taraweeh. So some people they come just for correcting mistakes. Now the person will stand in the last saf. Now that bichara hafiz saab made some mistakes, so he'll shout from there. So mistakes and errors anybody can make. So even if your own shaykh, for whom you have azmat and muhabbat and aqidat, if he has to make a mistake, then you must not argue with others and say, no, but my shaykh did this, so therefore I'm going to do that. If you know that it is a mistake, then find out, get an explanation. Sometimes it may not be a mistake, there may be a genuine reason for what he is doing. The person could be mazur why he is doing that. Especially when it comes to salat, the performance of the salat, then the postures of salat according to the sunnah, it is different from what we see an elderly person doing. The imam has gone old, the sheikh has gone old, or has gone sickly and weak. So now his postures are not exactly as it should be. So we look at that and we say, now what kind of namaz is this sheikh making? Or we will take that and we will say, no, that's how I saw my sheikh bending not very much when he went to ruku. And in sajda also his hands were on his knees instead of opening them out. Now the person, elderly person, weak person, sick person, he should not put his arms on the ground. If he wants some support because of weakness, then try first to put it on your knees when you are in sajda. Now he saw that kind of sajda the sheikh was making, so he said, now this is khilaf sunnat. So then he must ask the sheikh that what is the correct procedure, what is the correct posture for sajda, for ruku. Ask two or three questions, with that ask about the sajda too. Then if you ask him, he'll tell you, must open your arms, keep your elbows away from your side. But if a person is sick, is weak, is mazur, then this is how he should make it. So now the masla gets cleared. But if the person just goes and argues with others that, no, I saw my sheikh, he was making namaz, when he went into sajda, his elbows were on his knees, so I'm going to read namaz like that. Now can you see how ikhtilafat starts? If the person is an alim, inshallah, he's not going to make that blunder. But the awam, they look at the amal of the sheikh, of the mufti, of the alim, and then they consider that as dalil and hujjat. Now in the sahaba ikram radiallahu anhum ajma'in's time, if in Madina Sharif a sahabi made some amal, then you could take it for granted that this amal was an amal that they saw Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam make. Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, they saw him. And that is why we get all these ikhtilafs of how far you should raise your hands and when you should raise your hands. And Rafa Yadain Mas'ala, where in some madrasas they speak for 7 days on Rafa Yadain. Now what is the need for speaking so long on Rafa Yadain? Accept it that there are two different opinions here, and both are haq. Give some dalail of the ahnaf and some dalail of the shawaf and proceed. Don't spend too much of time in those masail which are not really relevant to the times also. And especially understanding that Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam, there were different things that happened at different periods of time in his life. In the early days, the postures of his salat were not exactly the same as in the latter days. Now those who saw him in the early days and then they moved away, they went to Syria or they went to Ethiopia or they went to other places. So wherever they went and made bayan that we saw Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam raise his hands here or do this or do that. Now what they saw, they went and related, which was correct. Now that time there was no internet and communication system like we have today, that you can pick up the phone and straight away find out what happened. So in the country that they went, whoever was the muhaddis of the time or who was the sahabi came there and passed on the knowledge, then you will find that that is what became prevalent in that area. So as students of deen, then we accept that there are different postures, and Nabi alayhi salatu wasalam had himself undertaken these postures, but afterwards what was his later action did not become known to these people that were gone thousands of miles away. How simple and easy, finish, ikhtilaf is over. So the ikhtilaf that a person makes without knowledge, that is what we term as batil, or to be rejected or discouraged, because a person doesn't have the usools and he wants to come to conclusions. A person is standing and is watching the surgeon operate. So now he watched a few patients, this is how the surgeon placed his knife and this is how he operated. So now he goes to another hospital and when they are operating, now he gives his view that this is how you should operate. Then will it be acceptable? Or the same a person goes to court and he says that I know more than that advocate because I've read up so much of books. But they won't accept him. They'll ask for sanad. So this is an important lesson, that aqidat, muhabbat and azmat of the shaykh in its place. And it should be there because it is miftah of the muqamat. A person makes progress and taraqqi with the amount of aqidat, muhabbat, azmat he has, the amount of muhabbat he has. But then, he is also human. And there can be human errors. And he could be undertaking the action because of his uzar, because of his sickness. So if we don't understand anything or if we see something which appears to be wrong, then we must do exactly what Hazrat Mufti Mahmud Sahab Rahmatullah Alayhi did, that on that occasion he did not allow that action to go past because it would have created fitna. People would have dispersed from there without asking and then they would have said that no, Maulana was deliberately clipping his nails in a state of ihram, so that is proof enough for us that it is permissible to clip the nails in a state of ihram. Whereas it was being done because of his forgetfulness. There's a lapse of memory there. So there is nothing to be ashamed in correcting it or asking for correction or proper explanation. Now look at this one error that I made. How many things came out from there? Sometimes Allah Ta'ala makes you make a mistake for whose purposes we don't know. Many a times I noticed that we were doing something wrong or there was some weakness in our aqidat, azmat, muhabbat or whatever it may be of the shaykh. And just then, Mir Sahib, who is the Khadim-e-Khas of Hazrat Mawlana Hakim Muhammad Akhtar Sahib Damat Barakatuh, he will make some error or some mistake. And Hazrat will reprimand him. But we immediately understand that this was our mistake. He is reprimanding him so that we take a lesson. And then he says also, he said also once, that why that happened is sometimes Allah Ta'ala makes somebody make the mistake so that the shaykh, when he reprimands him, all the others get the lesson from it. So these mistakes and errors also, there's hikmat of Allah Ta'ala. So we should not consider anybody as inferior to us if he's making a mistake. As long as it's not deliberate, it is an error and the person is prepared to accept his mistake. But if out of arrogance and pride he wants to reject and he becomes offended and he thinks that now this is some humiliation and disgrace to accept and acknowledge my mistake, then of course that is the humiliation and disgrace, that he's not accepting the mistake. Because now people will say that he's arrogant, he's proud. He doesn't want to accept his mistake also. So you will become, inshallah, one day mudarrisin, you'll be teaching hadith kitabs, fiqh kitab, tafsir. So you can never take it for granted that the moment you qualify, then you are ready to teach all kitabs. It takes a long, long time. You have to be at it all the time. So much of mutala you have to still make after that. What can I do? I have to tell you, but this is my opinion and I don't force it down anybody's throat. But this is my opinion and I believe very firmly and strongly in what I'm telling you. That is the reason why I don't encourage a person to go for 1 year in the Jamaat immediately after qualifying. Immediately after qualifying, I don't encourage that the student must go out in the Jamaat for 1 year. What I say is that first teach for 2-3 years and then go for 1 year if you wish to. Now this is for those people who will be teaching in Darul Ulooms, who will be teaching the kitabs of tafsir and hadith and fiqh. Because once you are out for 1 year, your kitabs are out. You don't have the access to the kitabs after that. One day you're in this village, one day you're in that village, one day you're in this city and next day you're in some other country. Now there, the sum total of your knowledge and all your effort will revolve around the reading of the Fazail Kitabs. Wherever you are going to go, you are going to read the Fazail Kitabs. And there's nothing wrong with that. Every Jamaat has an usul. Mullah Ilyas Rahmatullah Alayh knew that this work will spread and it will go throughout the world. Allah Ta'ala had given him that kashf. And he knew that if I'm going to allow them to start entering into discussion of masail, then there'll be ikhtilafat. They'll forget what the purpose is. And they will start arguing with each other in the same talim there. That person will say, no, it should be done in this Hanafi way. And that person should be saying Shafi'i way. Then you wouldn't be able to unite, as we see nowadays, how the Arabs, Shafi'is, Malikis, Hanbalis, anyone, but all can work together. Why? Because they're limiting themselves to the fazail. But the moment, and your masail, he used to say, go to your ulama, find out and make amal. He didn't say must leave out the masail, that mustn't have any masail. There is another weakness, that sometime a person is going out in the Jamaat for years and years, but he hasn't had the tawfiq of picking up the Beshti Zewar and reading some masail, or going to some alim and asking him that, tell me exactly now, how must I make my salat? What are the farais, wajibat and sunnats of salat? What are the mufsidat of salat? He hasn't had the opportunity. His witr and other namazas, if he makes a mistake and error, he doesn't know, he's all totally lost. If he read dua ya qunut in the second rakat, thinking that it is the third rakat, and afterwards he realized, after having already made the dua ya qunut and then he made the sajda, and after the sajda, now he was sitting thinking it was the third rakat. Now he realized that no, this was the second rakat. Or there is a great doubt now whether it is the second or third, or it was the first or second. Now look at how many masail you find in the kitabs with regards to these type of situations. Now every person has to read namaz, so you can't say that these masail are not relevant to me. If you are not doing business, then we'll say that okay, you read it in the kitab. When you're doing business, then you discuss in detail about business masail. But these masail are everyday masail. The person is confronted with it every day, so he has to know the masail. But how many people will there be that you can find that they will tell you that now you must do this or do that, or you must make sajda sahwa, when must you make it? So Hazrat Mawlana Ilyas Rahmatullah Alayh didn't say that just keep reading fazail and don't worry about masail. He didn't say that. He said that just read fazail kitab in the talim so that you get the shock and the jazba of making amal. When you know the fazail, then you want to make the amal and get those virtues. But he said, find out the masail from your ulama. The Hanbali will ask his imam, the Shafi will ask his imam, the Hanafi will ask his alim. So if you are going to become a mudarris, you will be teaching kitabs of hadith and fiqh. Then my experience is this, that if you just leave the kitabs for a year or two immediately after qualifying, then you forget it. Or you don't forget it, but still you don't have that kind of grip over it. When you start teaching, then after 2 years or 3 years, it becomes very difficult. You have to make a lot of effort again. Sometimes it is as if you are seeing the kitabs for the first time again. I'm telling you from my own experience. So what I suggest is that the person should first complete 1 or 2 years of teaching those kitabs which he will be teaching in future again, and then if he wants to go, he can go. So now this must not be incorrectly understood, that this is a prevention or it is some discouragement from going out. That is not a discouragement. We are finding that we can't get specialists in subjects. When we are faced with problems in our jamiats and in our darul iftas, then they say, send this to India, send this masla to Pakistan, send this istifta here and there. Why? We got no specialists. Economics, how many specialists do we have? Islamic economics. If the Muslim banks have to tell us, now give us somebody who knows economics, he's a neck. Then we have a problem. If he wants an alim, In the medical world, it's the same thing. You have some, but a person who is a specialist in it. So now that can only come when this person is dedicated to that field. And immediately after qualifying, if the person goes away, yes, those who I will be teaching in the Makatib, they will be just teaching the Masail from the Talimul Islam or Beheshti Zewar, then we will say there's no problem, they can carry on. But those who have made up their minds that they want to teach kitabs and they will become mudarris in Darul Ulooms teaching big kitabs, then I have found that this is important, that the moment you qualify, immediately you start teaching. Start off from the early kitabs, first year, second year kitabs. 2-3 years work hard in that and then take leave and go if you wish to. Also, another weakness is this, that the person is desperate to get married. He just wants to get married. As soon as I qualify, I want to get married. Now he gets married, and after 1 month, then he says, I'm going for 1 year. After 1 month of living with his wife, now he says, I'm going for 1 year. Now how many of those women are suffering depression? Because you have lived with her for 1 month. So either live for her 1 year, 2 years, and then go for the 1 year, if she gives you permission for 1 year. By that time the person will forget 1 year too, then he'll go for 40 days. But if you made sabar for 6 years, 7 years of studies, the person is 22, 23, sometimes even more. But he kept saying, I want to complete my studies, I want to complete my studies. The parents kept saying, complete your studies, then get married. So he made sabar for 6 years, 7 years, 5 years. So now make sabar for one more year, go out in Jamaat first, and then come back and get married. Now if somebody has to give that kind of advice, do you call that person anti? Or is he giving advice that what should be done so that the families stay happy also, that there's no friction, the door stays open, that afterwards again if somebody else wants to go to, they'll say, yes, see how nice that person, he finished his 1 year, he came, he got married, now he's living with his wife, and now he'll go 40 days after 1 year. So there's nothing, no problem. So it's not a discouragement, it is an encouragement. And because you all have expressed some kind of husne zan and good opinion about this insignificant servant of Allah Ta'ala, then I consider it my duty to bring it to your attention. I won't tell this to everybody else at the Darul Uloom. But again, it must be conveyed correctly and put in the proper perspective. Our people have got a very bad habit that they misunderstand. The understanding is very weak. When a Maulana was giving a bayan, he said, Jab Jumai aaye, to muh par haath rakh kar, la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah padhna chahiye. So now all those dihatis that were there, now they heard, Jab Jumai aaye, to put hand and read, la hawla wa la quwwata. So now when one of the son-in-laws came, so the mother-in-law started making, la hawla wa la quwwata illa. The father-in-law started making, la hawla wa la quwwata. Say, now what's this now? New masla you all came out with, when the son-in-law comes, put a hand in me, la hawla wa la quwwata. Is a shaitan what? So they asked that muqarrir sahab, that what did you say? He said, maine to kaha tha jamai aaye. It means that if you yawn, then put your hand. So now that he translated as jamai aaye. Took the Gujarati meaning of it. So what I'm telling you, there's great wisdom in it because of the large number of cases that we are getting of depression and all kinds of problems with the families, and so much of tufan after that you get. Why? Because the person only stayed 1 week and he says, I'm making mujahada, I'm going. But you are prepared to make that mujahada? Is your wife prepared to make that mujahada? And the example we will give is of the time of the Sahaba Ikram Ridwanul Alim Ajma'in, that Hazrat Hanzala radiallahu ta'ala anhu, it was the first night and he just heard the call, and he went into the battlefield and he gave his life and he became shaheed. There's no doubt, even today, if there is a call like that, then we will say, everyone, forget your wives, forget your children, forget your properties, and go out for the defense of Islam, because it's a Muslim country and there's an attack from all sides and you have to defend the borders. So this is not the time now to hukuk of the wife and all that. Now you go and that is the haq, that you must go and give your life and become shaheed or become a ghazi and return. Like in Afghanistan, when the attack was coming from all sides. Now at that time, even if I had a khanqa with 100,000 murids, I would have closed the doors of that khanqa and I would have said, all of us, let's go there. And whatever we can do, we must do. If we can't do very much, at least we can throw stones, we'll throw stones. But go out in the defense of the deen of Islam. This is not the occasion now to sit in the khanqa and make illallah and tarbiyah and tazkiyah. Now is the time to go away there, because the attack is already on. But if there's no attack, there's still preparations being made or just to talk about it, and you are carrying on with your dars and everything, they will say carry on. So everything has got a place. So this is my advice and suggestion to those people who are at Darul Ulooms, that no matter how strong the tashkil that is made, but if you are going to become a mudarris, if you are going to be teaching in a Darul Uloom, and you will be coming a mudarris of hadith or fiqh or something, then get down to teaching quickly, because you forget the kitabs very quickly. Yes, there are exceptions also. Sometimes a person's taqwa becomes the means of even those kitabs opening up in front of him, and Allah gives him that uloom which he didn't even get from the kitabs. Without ustad also Allah Ta'ala gives it to him. And that is for those people who are going to make tazkiyah of their qulub. As Hazrat Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah Alayhi told to the ulamas, he says, oh you ulama, after qualifying, don't get onto the mimbar straight away. First go and spend some time by some ahle dil and make tazkiyah. After that, when you're going to go on the mimbar, then the whatever you're going to say from there, there'll be tasir on the hearts of the people. So they have recommended tazkiyah of the qalb before you start teaching and before you start doing anything else. Now if you can get that tazkiyah in a month or 2 months or 6 months in the jamaat, if you can get that tazkiyah, then by all means go immediately after you qualify and then come and start teaching. Now you may wonder, what am I saying? I wish I could have spoken to you in Urdu, but we have others here who don't understand Urdu. Lekin phir bhi samajhne ki baat ye hai ki ek hai jamaat mein nikalna. To jamaat mein jab aap nikloge, to aksar ye hota hai ki ek alim hota hai jamaat. One alim will be taking the jamaat and going. So you are made the amir of the jamaat. Ab madrasa se nikalne ke foran baad, jab ye imarat mil gayi, he became the amir. تو پھر تزکیہ اس امیر صاحب کا کون کرے گا؟ سمجھ میں آئی بات؟ امیر صاحب کا تزکیہ کون کرے گا؟ اس لئے کہ وہ تو فارغ ہوتے ہی امیر بن گیا اور اس کو تو ابھی تزکیہ کی بہت ضرورت ہے. پڑھنے کے زمانے کے جو ساری خرابیاں ہیں وہ ابھی اس کے دل سے نکلی نہیں. پڑھنے کے زمانے میں جو ان کے دل کے اندر کمزوریاں ہیں اور جو دل کی بیماریاں ہیں, اس نے اس کا تو اصلاحی علاج کیا نہیں. کبر ہے, فخر ہے, عجب ہے. اب یہ تو بیماری عام ہوتی ہے طالب علموں کے اندر, تو اس کا تو اس نے علاج کہیں کیا نہیں اور وہ بن گیا امیر. اور امیری کے ساتھ وہ مقرر بھی بہت شاندار ہے, امیر بھی ہے اور بہت شاندار مقرر بھی ہے. تو اب جب وہ تقریر کرے گا جماعت میں, تو لوگ اس کا ہاتھ چومیں گے, کوئی پیشانی پر بوسا دے گا, کوئی قدم بھی چوم لے گا, اور سب مجمع وواہ ہوا کرے گا تو ایسے وقت میں اس کے دل کا کیا حال ہوگا اگر تزکیہ نہیں کیا. میرے دوستوں کو سمجھ میں بات آئی؟ That person became very امیر. Now what about his condition? Because he just qualified and became very امیر and took the jamaats here, there, everywhere. So now all that crowd that will come around him, and if he's a powerful speaker also, so all the wahwa and the mubarakbad and the kissing of the hands, and so if he hasn't made ilaj of his kibr and ilaj of ujub, then uska satyanas ho jayega. Awamun nas uska satyanas kar denge. عوام الناس کی عقیدت اس کے دل کو ستیاناس کر دے گی. حضرت شاہ جی رحمت اللہ علیہ سے جب میں تقریر کرتا ہوں تو عوام الناس میں کوئی آہ آہ کرتا ہے, کوئی واہ واہ کرتا ہے. ان کی آہ آہ اور واہ واہ نے شاہ جی کو برباد کر دیا. Now although, I mean, he was saying it out of tawazu, there was no such thing as it had an effect. But he says that these are things which have an effect. So this is what Hazrat Shaykh Abdul Qadir Jilani Rahmatullah Alayhi meant, that first go and make tazkiyah of your qulub by some ahlullah. Spend some time there and get the jila in your heart, the nuraniyat in your heart, the noor of that nubuwat in your heart. If somebody was fortunate that during his days of dars, he was also in the company of some ahlullah, or the shaykh that was teaching, he was also from amongst the ahlullah, and the student also studied, or when he was sitting in his dars, he was sitting there not only for the ilm, but also for the amal, and for that noor that was in the heart of that shaykh. Lots of madaris, alhamdulillah, they've got some shuyukh who are true ahlullahs. Now if you sit in their company for the whole year, then we will say that this person can come out immediately from there and go on the mimbars. Inshallah, his heart will not be affected. So we are talking about the majority of the cases where the ilaj hasn't been made. Nafsani khahishad are ghalib on the person, and he knows himself. بہت سے طلبہ جو ہے ان کی شکایت کیا ہے کہ چونکہ بڑی عمر ہو گئی, شادیاں نہیں ہوئی ہے, تو اب وہ غلط طریقے سے اپنے منی کا اخراج کرتے ہیں. تو کیا اب ایسے طالب علم کے دل کے علاج کی ضرورت نہیں ہے؟ بخاری شریف کے طالب علم ہے, نظر بد کے اندر مبتلا ہے, کبھی شادی بھی ہو جاتی ہے لیکن پردے وغیرہ کا کوئی اہتمام نہیں ہوتا ہے. تو یہ سب چیزیں جو ہے اس کی اصلاح کون کرے گا؟ اگر ہم نکل کر کے سب کی اصلاح شروع کر دیں گے تو ہماری اصلاح کون کرے گا؟ اس لیے کوئی بھی ایسا عالم آپ مجھے نہیں دکھلا سکتے اپنے اکابر میں سے کہ جن کو اللہ تبارک و تعالی نے بہت ہی رفعت کا مقام دیا. Show me one from all those who reached heights in their ulum and in their amal and in their istiqamat and in their taqwa, and from whom a world of people benefited. Show me one that he didn't go to some Shaykh-e-Kamil and make islah. Not only that, the moment their Shaykh passed away, immediately they chose another one. He passed away, they chose another one. And yet they had murids themselves, thousands of them. Why? There must be some reason. They were not short of knowledge. Definitely they were not short of knowledge. Haji Imdadullah Rahmatullah Ali used to ask masail from Hazrat Maulana Rashid Ahmad Sahib Gangohi Rahmatullah Ali, his own murid. So they were not short of knowledge. It was something else that they used to go for. So that is all I am saying. That go out in the jamaat. It's required, it's a work that is required, and especially in these days when people haven't got that talab to go to the masjid, they haven't got that talab to learn deen. They haven't got the talab in them to go to some khanqa and make islah. So who is going to create that talab in them? Allah Ta'ala reward these jamaats which are going door to door and village to village and country to country and creating that urge and interest in their hearts to go and learn the deen of Allah Ta'ala and make amal. But it's just that after that it's just left there that you are creating that interest. So then from there you must take them a step further, that now the interest has been created, so now learn some masail, go to the ulama, find out. So such type of students, there is no problem, who have made the tazkiyah during the time of their studies, then there is no problem, they can go and start teaching straight away. And wallah, I'm telling you that the mahol today is such of the madaris that very few have really got that shoba of tazkiyah in there. In fact, it has become a big joke in many madaris. The shoba of tazkiyah is a big joke. The person is called a Sufi sahab and given all kinds of titles and labels. Now if you have a student in your madrasa and that student just does his work, assalamu alaikum rahmatullah, how are you bhai, that his companion in the room says, mashallah, alhamdulillah, I'm well. Now this person says, right, I'm just want to make mutala of my kitab, I'm just doing my studies, I'm doing some research, and finish all his spare time besides his little walk and tafree, but all his spare time is going in research and mutala and in the library. He doesn't mix too much with the students, he doesn't mingle too much with them, he doesn't talk too much with them. So what do the students say? He is a Sufi sahab, he's snubbish. Now that student becomes, they give him the title, he's snubbish. He hasn't got a good mizaj. He's got khushki in him. Whereas that was the right thing that a student should be doing. He's staying away from layani, staying away from ghibat, and he's spending his time correctly in the purpose for which he is in the madrasa, he's spending the time in that. So we should be happy that he has a model, a role model for us. But instead we become unhappy with such a student. Well, here in South Africa is not much of a problem, but many, many students in India and Pakistan, they take admission to the madrasa because there's extreme poverty at home. There's no food, no clothing, nothing sometimes. So in the madrasa at least they get twice meals, there's breakfast too, they get a set of clothing too, all scholarships and bursaries. So there are a large number of them who just take admission for nothing else. That is why one ustad used to say ke talib ilm aaj kal bahut se aise bhi hai ke jab khana aata hai to wo dusre talib ilm se kehta hai ki jis maqsad ke liye humne ghar bar choda tha wo maqsad ab hazir hai, isliye dastarkhan par aa jao. That was the maqsad. But of course we should not generalize that it's not all are like that. Madaris, if they were not producing kuffas and ulama and qurra, then what would have happened to the society? So that suggestion is because of the depression that the women are undergoing. If you get married and 1 month's time you say I'm going for 1 year, so instead of that make sabr for another 1 more year, complete the 1 year and then get married. Get a lot of students, they say, Molna, I can't make sabar now and I want to get married and all that. I mean the last year and final year and all. So he says, well then get married. But he doesn't tell you that after that immediately, as soon as he finishes, he wants to go for 1 year. If he says that, then immediately I tell him, why, if you made sabar for 6 years, then make sabar for 1 more year and then finish your 1 year and come and then get married. Now what I had in mind, and I don't know where we went from where we started, the time has expired. Now that is what you must understand, that when I have had something in mind which I wanted to read to you and explain to you, and I didn't even touch it, didn't even open it and didn't even start it, then you must believe that whatever was said, it is Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala's system, that for somebody or the other in that majma, there may be something that was beneficial. So Allah Ta'ala puts it into the mind for the benefit of the person, that he gets some direction. Now that one small error that was made, now that error, all this whole bayan took place from that. That in the aqidat, azmat and muhabbat of one's shaykh, it must not be that we become blind. That if he has made a mistake or has made an error, then we do not correct that error, or we do not ask him for an explanation. We just take it for granted that now what he has done is the right thing, and now we go and argue with other people, murids of other shaykhs, no, but I saw my shaykh doing it this way. But that shaykh could have made a mistake, he could have forgotten, could have been a lapse in his memory. So the aqidat must be there, the muhabbat must be there, the azmat must be there. But we follow Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's hukam. The shaykh is the one who is teaching us what Allah and His Rasul Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam are demanding of us. So if he is making a mistake, then it's human. Then you have to get it corrected. Because he won't do anything deliberately, otherwise he's not worthy of being made a shaykh. If he's going to deliberately do things wrong, then what kind of a shaykh is there? So there could be a mistake. Since it's your last day today, so if you have any questions now, then you can find out. We don't have much time, but many of them who came and they had many, many questions, but alhamdulillah, the majority of them seem to have had all the questions answered. Some personal problem was a different thing, but questions related to their tarbiyah, tazkiyah, and suluk and tasawuf and the purpose of these type of get-togethers, it's, and whatever doubts they had, alhamdulillah, in the individual meetings with most of them, they say all answered, all questions answered. But sometimes it can happen, something is not answered, then you can find out. بالکل جائز نہیں غیر شرعی علاج جائز نہیں یعنی اگر وہ مرید سے کہتا ہے کہ تم کسی معصیت کا ارتکاب کرو تو کیسے جائز ہو سکتا ہے ہاں کبھی ایسا ہوتا ہے جیسے حضرت تانوی رحمت اللہ علیہ نے ایک جگہ پر ان لوگوں کو تازیہ نکالنے کی اجازت دے دی تھی اس لیے کہ وہاں پر ارتداد تھا وہ سب اسلام چھوڑ کر کے ہندو بن رہے تھے تو جب حضرت نے ایک جماعت بھیجی اور خود بھی تشریف لے گئے تو ان لوگوں سے کہا کہ آپ یہ سمجھایا ان کو تو انہوں نے کہا نہیں ہم تو مسلمان ہیں تو کہا کیسے مسلمان ہو اس نے کہا ہم تازیہ نکالتے ہیں تو کہا ہاں ضرور نکالو اس کو تو اب جو سننے والے تھے وہ سمجھے کہ یہ کیسے حضرت نے تو خود اس کی تردید کی ہے اور اتنے خلاف لکھا ہے اور ان کو کیسے اجازت دے دی تو فرمایا اس کا وقایا ہے ابھی جو ہے یہ تازیہ ان کا نکالنا یہ ارتداد سے رکاوٹ بنی ہوئی یعنی وہ سمجھ رہے کہ ہم مسلمان ہیں چونکہ ہم یہ کرتے ہیں تو ابھی کم سے کم ان کو وہ سمجھنے دیجئے کہ ہم مسلمان ہیں اب علماء جائے ان محنت کرے ان کو سکھائے سمجھائے علم پہنچائے تو پھر وہ خود سمجھ جائیں گے اور یہ چھوڑ دیں گے اور ایسا ہی کیا پھر انہوں نے جماعتیں بھیجی وہاں پر ان کو سکھانے کے لیے تو وہ چونکہ بالکل کوئی کفر تو تھا نہیں کچھ اس طرح کا اور ایک موقع تھا تو اس قسم کا علاج کبھی ہو تو ہو لیکن معصیت کا ارتکاب اگر کوئی شیخ کرائے تو پھر ان کو سلام کہہ کر کے رخصت ہو جانا چاہیے جی تو وہ تو حرام تو نہیں ہے وہ تو حرام علاج نہیں تھا اس نے کہا کہ اس کا جو ان کو پہلے تو وہ گیو ہم لیکزیٹو مسل دیا وہ اس عورت کو دے دیا اور پھر جو سب پاخانہ جمع ہوا تو پھر وہ جو مرید صاحب اس کے چہرے پر فدا ہو رہے تھے, جب وہ بالکل کمزور ہو گئی تو اور اس کی نظر اب ہٹ گئی تو کہا کہ وہ کیا تھا اس کے اندر, یہی تو پاخانہ تھا تو تم اسی پر فدا ہو رہے تھے. تو وہ ایک علاج تھا, علاج کے سلسلے میں اس قسم کی تدبیریں وہ ایک الگ چیز ہے, حرام تو ہے نہیں. میں تو یہ کہہ رہا ہوں کہ شیخ کی عقیدت محبت عظمت کے اندر وہ درجہ نہیں ہونا چاہیے کہ شیخ ایک بالکل کھلی غلطی کر رہا ہے اور مرید سمجھ بھی رہا ہے کہ یہ خلاف شرع کام کر رہا ہے, لیکن عقیدت اور محبت اور عظمت کی وجہ سے اب وہ شیخ سے پوچھتا بھی نہیں اور نہ کوئی کسی اور سے پوچھتا ہے کہ یہ عمل صحیح ہے غلط ہے, کچھ نہیں, اور عقیدت کے اندر بس اندھا دھن عمل کر رہا ہے. تو اس کی وہ آپ آئے نہیں تھے اس وقت, ایک مثال میں نے دی تھی کہ حضرت مولانا ابرار الحق صاحب دامت برکاتہم مینا کے اندر اپنے ناخون تراش رہے تھے احرام کی حالت میں, تو اب حضرت کی شخصیت کون واقف نہیں, اور محی السنہ ان کا لقب ہے اور اتنے پابند اور محتاط اور عظیم شخصیت بھی ہے, تو اور وہاں پر بڑے بڑے علماء تھے ساتھ, تو اب جب دیکھا کہ ناخون تراش رہے احرام کی حالت میں تو کسی کی ہمت نہیں ہوئی پوچھنے کی, تو حضرت مفتی محمود صاحب رحمۃ اللہ علیہ بھی اسی مجلس میں تھے, تو آپ نے فرمایا حضرات آپ کیا کر رہے ہیں؟ تو مولانا ابرار الحق صاحب نے جواب دیا کہ مجھے بالکل خیال ہی نہیں رہا کہ میں احرام کی حالت میں ہوں اور مینا میں ہوں, یعنی کہیں تصور میں غرق ہوں گے اللہ تعالیٰ کی صفات میں. تو اب دیکھیے اگر اس موقع پر حضرت مفتی صاحب رحمۃ اللہ علیہ یہ سوال نہ کرتے تو جو وہاں پر مریدین فدا تھے حضرت پر تو وہ دوسروں کے ساتھ لڑتے جھگڑتے کہ تم تو یہ کہتے ہو کہ احرام کی حالت میں یہ ناخون کاٹنا جائز نہیں ہے, اور ہم نے تو اپنی آنکھوں سے اور نظروں سے دیکھا کہ اتنی بڑی شخصیت اور وہ اپنا ناخون تراش رہے تھے, تو دیکھو کتنا بڑا فتنہ ہو جاتا. تو ایسی حالت میں پوچھ لینا چاہیے. کبھی یہ ہوتا ہے کہ ایک عذر ہوتا ہے, عذر کی وجہ سے وہ شیخ کچھ کر رہا ہے. ایک شیخ کو پیشاب کے قطرے آ رہے تھے, ہی ہیڈ اے ویک بلیڈر سو ہی واز گیٹنگ قطرز آف پیشاب کے قطرے آ رہے تھے ڈراپس, اور بہت معذوری کی حالت تھی. تو انہوں نے ایک لنگوٹی باندھ رکھی تھی احرام کے نیچے. اب احرام کی حالت میں وہ باندھنا جائز نہیں ہے, اف سمبڈی ویئرز بریف ان دا اسٹیٹ آف احرام از ناٹ جائز. تو اب انہوں نے جو باندھ رکھی تھی, اب کسی مرید کو یہ تو معلوم نہیں کہ وہ کیوں انہوں نے باندھ رکھی, تو اب وہ کہتے ہیں ہم نے تو دیکھا تھا ہمارے شیخ بھی لنگوٹی باندھتے تھے احرام کی حالت میں, لیکن جس کو معلوم ہے وہ سمجھے گا کہ نہیں یہ ایک عذر تھا, معذور تھے, اور وہ اس کا صدقہ دیتے ہوں گے یا دم دیتے ہوں گے یا جو بھی ہو. تو کتنا ضروری ہے کہ عقیدت ہونی چاہیے لیکن اندھی نہیں, یعنی احترام بھی ہو, عظمت بھی ہو, محبت بھی ہو, لیکن کوئی عمل اگر شیخ سے غلط ہو رہا ہو تو محبت کے ساتھ عظمت کے ساتھ ان سے معلوم کر لینا چاہیے کہ یہ عمل جو آپ کر رہے ہیں کتابوں میں تو یہ آیا ہے یا ہم نے یہ سنا ہے یا یہ حضرت اس میں بارے میں کیا فرماتے ہیں, تو حقیقت معلوم ہو جائے گی, تو پھر شیخ سے بھی وہ عقیدت ختم نہیں ہوگی, ورنہ تو وہ مرید بھی سمجھے گا اگر پوچھے گا نہیں تو کبھی تو وہ اندھادھن عمل کرے گا اور کبھی اس کی عقیدت ختم ہو جائے گی کہ میں نے ایسے شیخ سے بیعت کی ہے کہ جو خلاف شرع عمل کرتا ہے, چونکہ پوچھا تو نہیں اس نے کہ اس وقت ان کو یاد ہی نہیں رہا تھا, تو اب وہ توڑ دے گا بیعت, اور سب سے کہے گا کہ میں کیوں توڑ دی تم نے بیعت حضرت سے, تو کہا اس لیے کہ وہ خلاف شرع عمل کرتے. تو کتنی احتیاط کرنی پڑتی ہے, بدگمانی سے بچنا چاہیے. حضرت تھانوی رحمۃ اللہ علیہ فرماتے تھے کہ دو چیزوں سے لوگ برباد ہو گئے علماء خاص کر, ایک بد زبانی اور ایک بدگمانی. اللہ تعالی حفاظت فرمائے. اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد وعلى آل سيدنا محمد وبارك وسلم. اللهم إنا نسألك من خير ما سألك منه نبيك وحبيبك سيدنا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، ونعوذ بك من شر ما استعاذك منه نبيك وحبيبك سيدنا محمد صلى الله عليه وسلم، وأنت المستعان وعليك البلاغ، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله. وصلى الله تعالى على خير خلقه سيدنا ونبينا وشفيعنا ومولانا محمد وآله وأصحابه أجمعين برحمتك يا رب.